It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
And now Julio has a chance to win it at the bottom of the 10th. We've got a pitching change.
That's your ball game! Julio wins it in the 10th inning! They'll all go home happy tonight.
How about that? That was a bullet, too. He hit an absolute line drive into right center field. Inside out swing. It's a really, that's a great approach right there.
Julio Rodriguez with the walk-off hit on Friday night against the Boston Red Sox. Actually, it was last night, right? Late last night, Julio with the walk-off. And as requested during the week, this song is back from Pavement. Stephen Malkmus and Pavement, several of them big baseball fans, the major leagues indeed. Julio Rodriguez, his first career walk-off hit, and that was pretty damn cool to watch that last night, late last night, or early this morning, depending on when you saw it. And if you didn't, well, there it was. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. We'll talk to Sam Blum from The Athletic about Ohtani and more at about 11:25. But we're going to spray around MLB a little bit and give you my team of the moment as well. First, though, let's take a look at the lineups as in for both of the local games coming up today. First, the White Sox will be hosting the Tigers. Jack Flaherty, the former Cardinal, the former Harvard Westlake High School teammate of Max Fried and Lucas Giolito, former tutor or under the tutelage of Ethan Katz. He goes for Detroit against Eric Fetty and the White Sox. I'm very much looking forward to watching Fetty and Flaherty as I combine them into a golfer and a golf analyst right there. Can we dump the last 20 seconds? Is that how it worked? Can I just dump the last 20 seconds, pretend none of it existed?
Yeah,
Sean, do we have
exactly
that capability? Yeah, that's how it works? Okay, let's pretend it didn't exist. Let's wipe it. I need a flashy thing, like from Men in Black. Eric Fetty against Jack Flaherty for the White Sox and the Tigers today. White Sox lineup, Benintendi, Moncada, Robert Jr., Eloy, Andrew Vaughn at first base, Shoemake at second base today. Paul DeJong gets the start at short. Dominic Fletcher, the former D-back out there in right field, and Corey Lee, the young catcher. That's a more interesting player to watch than Martin Maldonado, who you know very well. You know what he brings, and he's on the tail end of what he brings. It's always more fun in a rebuilding year to watch the kids and see if they're any good, right? So there's Corey Lee playing a catcher for the White Sox today. Cubs and Rangers in Texas. If the Cubs got to win this so they can meatloaf. You got to meatloaf them, take two out of three, and then come back and try to right the ship at Wrigley. John Gray, the former Rocky, on the mound for the Rangers. Jordan Wicks, the Cubs young lefty who came up and was so good last year with that great wipeout changeup. You'll see Jordan Wicks today on your television, and you'll hear it right here on your radio at 670 The Score. 1:35 is the first pitch, 1 o'clock. we begin pregame. The lineup is this. Ian Happ leads off as a DH. So kind of a little pseudo day off for Ian Happ and the hamstrings. He will be the DH, but will not play defense. Seiya Suzuki hits second in right. Cody Bellinger in center. And Christopher Morel is the cleanup hitter. Then Dansby Swanson at five. Michael Bush at six. Nico Horner at seven. That, folks, is so far the established top seven against right-handed pitching. We've now seen at least a couple of times anyway. Mike Tauchman gets the start in left field and will play for the first time in 2024. And Miguel Amaya is the catcher. So you get Amaya, you get Happ as a DH, you get to see Tauchman in left, and otherwise you're seeing that lineup as previously represented by Craig Counsell. All right, so I wanted to talk to you about a team of the moment. And for that, Sean, we've got everything ready. It's very exciting. We've got the music. We've got a highlight. And then I've got a drunk owner. I mean, there's a lot going on here. But yes, I'll give it to you every once in a while when the mood strikes, my team of the moment. It's the Baltimore Orioles on the strength in part of finally having an ace.
Standing atop the hill here at Camden Yards, 29 years old, 6'3", 245 pounds from Bakersfield, California. He is the new ace of the Baltimore Orioles, a National League Cy Young winner 3 years ago, the crown jewel of Michael Elias' offseason. Corbin Burnes looks pretty good in orange and white. Payoff pitch to start the year. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Corbin Burnes in a nutshell. It's been untouchable. 11 strikeouts, 16 in a row retired.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Oh, yeah, with apologies to Asia. The team of the moment is the Baltimore Orioles. They just have that glow. I think they're going to win the whole damn thing. And I've thought that during the offseason, and I am emboldened now watching them through the first two games. I mean, so far, the Orioles have gone, I believe it was, what, 13-4, and then 11-2, I think are the scores, both Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez were dominant, getting a ton of swing and miss. And those, they've got both those guys at the top, but Burnes, the undoubted ace who you know you can just pencil in. There is nothing as valuable in baseball as a front of the rotation top line pitcher, because it affects the confidence and comfort level of absolutely everyone else on the roster. Everyone. So they've got that, and then they've got all these outrageous kids. Gunnar Henderson is going to be up there in MVP conversation, if it's not Adley Rutschman who's going to be up there in MVP conversation. Did you see Jackson Holliday's start at the minor leagues already? My goodness, that guy could have started on the big league level, but they've got Cedric Mullins, and they got to figure out where to put Holliday, but they're just absolutely, absurdly, embarrassingly loaded. And they're about to finalize their transfer to new owners. And in a week when Peter Angelos passed away, rest in peace, the new owner, Mike Arrighetti, made sure to get every Orioles fan he could a beer on opening day.
Myself. I'm Mike Arrighetti, one of the new owners of the O's. This is my best friend Smitty, also a new owner of the O's. And this is Mitch. We're buying everybody a beer.
Let's go!
Let's go! Let's go!
They've got that new ownership bump. That's what they're going to feel. That's what they're going to ride. I'm sure the broadcasters are riding it. Kevin Brown is probably riding it, that new ownership bump. I'm sure he's happy with the new peeps. And overall, the Orioles just have, they have that glow. They have that thing. Thank you to the Texas for pointing out, yes, the Cubs cannot Meatloaf because Meatloaf is winning 2 out of 3 because 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Thank you very much. You're hoping to keep the Rangers to only a Meatloaf as opposed to a sweep. That's really what I was trying to say. There is, however, somebody awesome, my favorite player in the game, who I took number one in the fantasy draft earlier in the week. Shocking many who assumed I was going Ronald Acuna, but with the number one pick, I chose positional flexibility, and I feel pretty good about it. The man played second base on Friday, did Mookie Betts of the Dodgers, and he made a hell of a play.
It's important to him to reestablish that he can go out there and do that.
A little check swing, and a diving catch by Mookie Betts.
The jump off the bat, that's everything. The first two steps, he knew he had to get out there, timed it perfectly. Like, the man don't got enough hardware in his house.
Mookie Betts with a great catch at second base. He's played second. He's played shortstop. You know he's Gold Glove caliber in right field. He's played a lot of center in his life. And, oh, by the way, he's hitting bombs left and right.
A 1-1 from Helsley. Mookie Betts hits it high, hits it hard. Left center field at the wall. Gone! Mookie Betts won't let the Dodgers go quietly. They're within one.
4 out of 5 times tonight he has reached base. The only time he recorded an out was a pop-up to center field.
Man, that dude is just outrageous. He has played more games than just about everybody else this year because they played the ones in Korea. He's played 5 games. His OPS is above 2. He's got 10 RBIs already. Got 4 homers and 10 RBIs on 11 hits, does Mookie Betts, playing the middle infield. I think he's going to win MVP. Sean, you think he's going to win MVP. How do you feel about my choice to take him number one overall ahead of Acuna? Right now it's aging well.
Dude, that's exactly what I would have done. He is so good. He gets to play Major League Baseball like it's Little League. Like, he gets to go be the shortstop, and tomorrow he's going to be the second baseman, and maybe he'll pitch, and maybe he'll be in left field, and he's going to do it all awesomely. And also, he's leading the league in home runs.
And also, he's a very nice guy.
Just
he's
super like a fun.
Super fun, kind, well-adjusted dude who likes to help feed the homeless after a World Series game, as he did one night in Boston. It's like, I mean, it's just... He's outrageous. He's born in a lab, I'm convinced. Ah, boy. How do we get players like that? 670, the score is where you are. Matt Spiegel is who you are with. A few more things to get to towards the end of the show, that's for sure. But coming up next, I want to know exactly what's going on with Shohei Ohtani and this investigation, and if there's anything that we should be aware of, anything we should be waiting on, any reason to think that this will get bigger or not? Let's talk to Sam Blum from The Athletic about it next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. And I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports. Up until a couple days ago, I didn't know that this was happening. Just to kind of just go over the result, in conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
That is the director of performance for the Los Angeles Dodgers, acting as the new interpreter for Shohei Ohtani the other day, as Shohei talked about everything that's going on. Look, this is Hit and Run, Chicago's venerable baseball show. We get to talk baseball in this unique two-team town, and we have all morning long done a ton of Cubs, a ton of White Sox, and we'll do some more Cubs. You'll hear from Craig Counsell, in fact, before we get out of here at the top of the hour. But this was the biggest story in sports. Is it fading away? Is it going to come back? What are we dealing with here? Let's talk to somebody who's been very, very close to it and done some excellent work. Sam Blum covers both the Angels and the Dodgers for The Athletic out there in California, and has been part of the reporting on Ohtani for The Athletic. since the news broke about the scandal with Ipe Muzihara. So let's talk to Sam right now, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Oh, look at that. Isn't that convenient, Sam? Circa's a great place. Home of the world's largest sports book. Thank you to Circa. This is the world we live in, Sam, where none of us have moral high ground. Not one of us.
That's a very well put. Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, it's crazy.
I'm losing $4.5 million though.
Right. Well, yeah. There's that, and there's the fact that I'm not playing, of course, in the games that I'm betting on or endorsing ways for you to play on them. But I wanted to touch on the personal side of it first. Mm-hmm. That interpreter that folks just heard there, that Dodgers director of performance, that moment signifies the first moment for Shohei Ohtani speaking publicly in America without Ipe Muzihara. Like since 2017, this is a dear friend who, you know, evolved into dog sitter and early on was car driver and all of this. It's like, I can't imagine the personal toll that this must be taking on Shohei if we are to take the story at face value at this moment.
Yeah, and I agree. I would also couch it with, if you take the story at face value, and if you do, I mean, it's a really, I would feel horrible for Ohtani. I mean, like you said, not only was he an interpreter, he was really every part of his life, involved in it. They would spend 365 days of the year together. There was no off days from this friendship, this relationship. You know, I think they were both very much reliant on each other in certain ways. I think it will be interesting to see how Ohtani kind of navigates Major League Baseball without Ipe. You know, it's I think goes beyond when people even really understand that level of reliance that he had on Ipe for everything, whether that's getting food, whether that's scouting for him, whether that's helping him train, whether that's, you know, going out and coaching him at times. I mean, this guy was everything. So it is a significant loss in Ohtani's orbit at his baseball, you know, way of being. You know, that being said, you played the audio on Will Ayrton there, the interim interpreter for Ohtani, and it didn't sound like there was a ton of love lost. He sounded quite frustrated, Ohtani did, with the way everything's played out. So, you know, we'll see. I think there's going to be, you know, you asked if the story's fading. I really think, you know, it's possible there are lulls in this just from a lack of new information, but, you know, this story is going to have a lot of legs and it's going to go on for a long, long time. And, you know, I'd be curious to see kind of where everything lands. You know, there are a lot of investigations happening right now.
So what investigations are happening right now? You've got the feds investigating Bowyer, the bookie. You've got MLB investigating Ohtani and the situation. What am I missing? If there's other stuff going on as well,
there's an IRS investigation into Ipe, and I think this is the situation in general. You know, possible, you know, tax fraud. I'm guessing there's probably a federal investigation. You know, that goes beyond just Bowyer, and it could go into everything that happened here. You know, Ohtani's representative said that they turned over information over to, you know, a federal authority, I believe, or, you know, an investigative authority, not necessarily saying which one it was. So there's still so much that has to happen. So I imagine that these investigations will require Ohtani's cooperation at some point. And, you know, as that happens, it will be interesting to see kind of where, you know, what gets out there, how the story evolves. You know, who's possibly held accountable for this, because there's going to be accountability in some capacity. At the end of the day, Shohei's, you know, bank account was paying out, you know, millions of dollars to an allegedly illegal bookmaker. So there's not just going to be the end of that, right? There's not just going to be an I'm sorry at the end of the story. There's going to be an accountability, I imagine, for some people, for someone, and we'll have to see how it all plays out. Because for right now, it's, you know, I think Shohei's story was believable to some extent. I think that, you know, I trust that he's not some sort of degenerate gambler, but I do think you have to find out if he had any awareness of this, you know, because it almost, you know, it goes beyond believability that he would have had no idea that millions of dollars were just, you know, being bled from his bank account without him knowing. But, you know, that's still to be determined. And it's, and for now it's, I guess, the story that everyone has been told.
You know, Sam Blum from The Athletic is with us. I think most of us know that in our personal lives, and we have watched it in public life too, the sooner you tell the truth, the better off you are in terms of public perception. And that's certainly true in personal life, right? Like the lie is what gets us in trouble on
Very
stuff. But, you know, listening to those like 12 minutes of what Ohtani had written, there were a bunch of times where I'm like, oh my God, is that all true? Like if he's really hammering down on this and painting Ipe as this, and if there are some lies in there, I'm not saying for sure there are, but it sure felt like there were a few times where I'm like, well, that kind of defies plausibility. I don't, will that damage him in the eyes of the Dodgers, in the eyes of the MLB, MLB investigation? Because, you know, on the corporate level, deny, deny, deny. We've always heard that as well. And then you have to be comfortable with the lies, but boy, it started to feel very awkward, and I wonder what the damage of a lie would be.
Well, you know, at this point, you take Ohtani at his word, and that's kind of my feeling on it. But I agree with you that there are certain aspects of the story that I think need to be followed up on, because it's you know, like it strains credibility to believe that some of those things could possibly be true. But you know, you take him at his word. I've never known Ohtani in the years that I've covered him closely to be someone that, you know, embellishes lies or even is, you know, anything other than honest. He's very evasive, but he's always been honest when he's spoken. So, you know, I for now, you know, you take him at his word, but if there is a lie, and I emphasize that if there is a lie here, that would be a significant blow to his reputation and to his career and possibly even to his ability to play the game. Because, you know, at the end of the day, this is not baseball. You know, we're not talking about baseball here, right? We're talking about real life stuff. And I think that's where some of the mistakes have been made in this process. You know, and I put a lot of emphasis for blame on Nez Bilello and the agency that's representing Ohtani and has, you know, at times provided, you know, incorrect information to reporters that have only inflamed the situation. And Nez has not come out and talked about this. He's, you know, he's put other people in front, you know, as a microphone to talk. And I think he, you know, has made decisions in this process that he needs to explain publicly. And it's, you know, it's not been a good reflection of Nez, and it is an accurate reflection of how he's always operated in Ohtani's, you know, I guess, way of being to some extent. I mean, he's always made things difficult, I think, for other people to understand kind of what he's dealing with. But I think that they just don't realize this is real life we're talking. This is not baseball. This is a serious situation. And so if there's a lie being told here, that could be very, very damaging. And you know, you hope for Ohtani's sake and for his ability to play this game at the highest level, because in my opinion, he's the greatest baseball player I've ever seen on a field. And I don't think many people could disagree with me on that one. You know, you hope at the end of the day, he's telling the truth here.
Yeah. You know, what is baseball going to learn on the larger scale from this stuff, Sam, whether it's about, you know, the mingling with unsavory characters like Bowyer, and if that's even something that's controllable, whether it's what you were touching on with Bilello, the agent, and the Dodgers, like everything going through the interpreter, and kind of respecting that boundary when the truth is you don't exactly know. I mean, like what are the broader lessons that MLB is going to take away?
You know, I mean, I think to me, it's less about lessons and more about warning signs here, because I look at this as, you know, I think we saw it a couple of days afterward in the NBA where a player was put on leave for, you know, potentially, you know, impact. He was like, you know, maybe betting on his props, you know, on the unders. And I think what you're seeing is like that it is very hard to keep gambling out of the actual game itself at times. And I think we're going to see more and more, you know, at the end of the day. And I'm not saying Ipe bet on baseball. I'm not saying Shohei bet on baseball. I'm not saying baseball was bet on at all here. But, I think gambling in and of itself is becoming a bigger and bigger issue when it comes to the actual game. I understand that, you know, fans, and it increases it. It helps the fan experience in a lot of ways. And, you know, you're not walking this back, I don't think. Like, this gate has been opened, and it is going to only keep getting wider and wider. But I think it's a warning sign, in my opinion, is to, you know, this is something they're gonna have to combat. And I think anybody who's found to be, you know, gambling in a way that breaks the rules needs to get face severe punishment. Even if on the outside it looks like it's, you know, and maybe it is to some extent a little bit hypocritical, because these leagues and these teams are partnering with gambling companies, and you know, it's silly to then go and suspend players for it. But you have to, because the integrity of the game is very important. And you know, if players and if teams and if coaches and if anybody is violating that, then everything becomes completely useless and it's not a game anymore. So I think it's a warning sign, and hopefully people are, you know, on guard for this and are making safeguards and putting those in place to make sure that this is, you know, not something that can happen in an even worse scale.
Last thing for you, Sam. The Angels had a team meeting after game two. Is that a good sign? Probably
no. Not a good sign. The first two games have not gone well for this team. You know, Ron Washington, you know, he brought the entire team out on their first off day, did a full team workout. I mean, I think that this things will be done a little differently here with Ron Washington. He's definitely a little more old school in certain ways. But no, it's not a good sign when you lose 24-7 the first two days.
It doesn't seem to be, but I'm glad Anthony Rendon has shown up. I think that's a nice touch that he's actually wants to be.
He's playing.
Yeah.
We'll see. You know, we'll see how long that goes and where that takes us. But yeah, the first couple of games have been rough.
Any chance that Mike Trout gets dealt this year at the deadline?
You know, he left open that possibility when he spoke at the beginning of spring. He's a very loyal person, I think, in a lot of ways in his life, if you know the guy. And I have a hard time believing he's going to pull that trigger and say he wants to be traded, because at the end of the day, he has that no trade clause, and that's up to him. Yeah. And, you know, also the contract, it makes, you know, the contract's not necessarily team friendly in any way. Like, he's getting older. He's shown some offensive decline, and that contract is gone through 2030. So I think in an ideal world, it makes more sense than it does in practicality. But you know, you never know with this team, and you never know with the way he might feel about where this team's going, because, you know, the Angels do not operate in the best interest of winning in a lot of ways. And you know, you see it year after year after year. And I think it's only a matter of time before he gets to that point where he might not feel like it's working for him. But, you know, it's so hard to predict with someone like Mike Trout, because he's really quite loyal to this place.
Sam Blum, thank you so much. Appreciate you. Have a wonderful rest of the season, and we'll check in down the road.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
All right, you got it. That's Sam Blum from The Athletic here on 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Tomorrow is the home opener at Wrigley Field. The emotions run deep for certain people. And I am very close to certain people that the emotions run deep for. And I want to share their story next here on Easter Sunday. Keep it here on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're ready. I mean, I think we've got to the point in spring training where, you know, you guys are prepared. And so you feel good about that. But look, you know, that's why the season is such a challenge, and why it's different. And what happens in spring training doesn't guarantee you anything. It doesn't guarantee the hot hitter in spring training a good opening day. None of that is guaranteed. It's competition, and you know, the other team's trying to beat you, and that goes on every single day. So it's a different, you know, you flip the switch to like a really different game. You know, you're at this slower spring training pace, this casual spring training pace, and that switch gets flipped really quickly, especially when you start on the road against a team like the Texas Rangers.
That is Cubs manager Craig Counsell the other day on Parkinson Spiegel. I love that show. I think it's a great show. Weekday afternoons. The Cubs season opening series in Texas concludes this afternoon. Our coverage begins at 1, coming up right here on 670 The Score with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 1:35. For the latest news on the Cubs or Sox, try listening to chapters from our show through the Odyssey app. Just search for 670 The Score and tap on a recent episode of our show to get started. And remember that tomorrow, The Score and BetMGM will be at Sluggers in Wrigleyville before the home opener. Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi will be broadcasting live from 10 to 12:45, followed by Zach Zaidman's pregame show until the first pitch. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run until the top of the hour. Some of you know that I am married to a meatball Cubs fan in the most delightful of ways. And as we all prepare for Easter festivities, Christine Spiegel, I have to ask you, are you going to the home opener tomorrow?
Yes, I am.
Who are you going with?
My best friend from grammar school.
Okay. Your best friend from grammar school. Your sister, who is also someone you went to grammar school with, is here. Right? You guys did go to grammar school together, Jenny?
Actually, she actually went to kindergarten with me twice.
Oh, that's right. I remember they wanted you to go together. Well, you know what? You guys are a podcast waiting to happen. That's just always been the case. But it's the home opener. Tell me what the Cubs home opener means to you guys, Jenny?
Can I start, please? Oh, my God. Okay, so I just want to say that a shout-out to my dad. So we went to St. Mary of the Angels Grammar School on Hermitage in Cortland, and there was an announcement every home opener day that said, you cannot take off today. No kid can be off on this day because it's a home opener.
So kids used to cut school and go to the Cubs home opener.
Until my dad showed up and walked in with his shorts, cut off shorts and a tank top and said, where's my kids? Get my kids. Jenny's in this grade and Chris is in this grade and we're going to the home opener. Go get them right now. And so while everyone was doing the lesson, or actually we had the home opener on TV, we'd say, bye, my dad's here, we're going, peace out. And we went, so.
All right, so if I'm psychologically profiling, the home opener means freedom from school, being cool, your dad loving you more than the rules, right? There's a lot of levels that go on with this for you guys. And I've seen you both very emotional at Wrigley Field, and it makes all the sense in the world. Christine, tell people about what would happen sometimes on a Sunday.
On a Sunday?
Yeah, wouldn't he pick you up and take you to?
So he would pick us up. He'd say, if the Cubs were playing, that's where we always went. We always went to Wrigley. We sat in the bleachers. We brought whatever cousin was available. It was amazing. And that, yeah, we absolutely loved it. And Sundays are still, like, if there's a Cubs game, that's where I want to be.
And Wrigley is an emotional, happy place for you, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. My favorite place in the world.
Is it an emotional, happy place for you too, Jenny?
100%. And back then, hot dogs were $1.50.
They used to have Frosty Malts. They got rid of Frosty Malts, which is a shame.
Yeah, they walk around with lemon chills now, you know, but they don't have any malts anymore.
Can I just tell you, game day, we would stand in line at the bleachers for $6 to get in, and we got there probably around 10 o'clock, and there was no, it was the best time ever.
Yes. So, yeah, let's paint that picture, can we please, of that time in the bleachers. So you guys get there. How quickly into the game does your dad's shirt come off?
Oh, right away. Right away. If it was hot, his shirt's off. He's drinking a beer. He's, like, talking to everyone around him. Yeah. And his best friend's with him. Yeah, it was amazing.
Okay. And then you guys are free to run around the bleachers a little bit, correct?
We're free to spend money.
Okay. And who was the outfielder that you talked to?
Jerry Morales. We would scream Jerry Morales until everyone around us, like, got sick of us, and we would be like, Jerry, Jerry, and then he would turn around and finally wave to us, and then we would shut up.
A favorite line was, hey, Monday, where's Tuesday?
What does that even mean?
Rick Monday. Yeah.
All right, so God. So
come on,
high end. Sean, I'm sorry. But the high end shtick that's going on out there in the bleachers.
This is good stuff.
Right? I mean, Sean, I love this, the, like, screaming Jerry Morales, Jerry, Jerry, until he turns around. Don't people still do that in the bleachers? Scream at somebody?
I remember screaming at, like, Shane Victorino when he's on the Phillies. Like, it still happens now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, it does. Christine, I know you're having, in particular, kind of a rough offseason and begin to the season because you miss somebody.
Yes, I miss Grandpa Rossi. It's hard to watch. It was hard to watch opening day without him, and it will be hard tomorrow. But I know I have to go on. But yeah, it breaks my heart that he's not a part of the team.
I gotta say, when I was with you guys and your dad at a game, I think it was 2 years ago, and we pulled every string that we could, and we got, like, the good fancy seats and all the things. He was as happy as I've ever seen that man. It's memorable, isn't it, Jenny? Him there with the two of you in the good seats.
Lifetime of memories with him, to be honest. And every year that we actually can take him, it's our celebration together of all the years that he has taken us to the home opener year after year after year. And we say, hey, this is us.
Yeah. So you get to give it back a little bit. It's beautiful stuff. All right. Thank you, ladies. Am I still making the asparagus, or is it made? I do. So I need, even though I just did a radio show, I have to make the asparagus. You know, I mean, I don't know if like, you know, Colin Cowherd has to make the asparagus today. Stephen A. Smith.
More money than you.
Colin Cowherd is indeed making more money than me. That is accurate.
That was amazing.
She's not wrong, Sean. She's not wrong.
No, it's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but I make the hell out of some asparagus
really?
Today. Happy Easter to you. Are you going? You going somewhere to celebrate and have a meal? What are you up to?
Yeah. I'm gonna go see my mom after this. We're gonna see my family out in the burbs. So. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I'm sure we'll have some green bean casserole and whatnot. Maybe not. I don't know about asparagus. I would eat some asparagus, though.
Right? I know. And just remember, folks, if you do eat the asparagus and then later on you're going to the bathroom and you smell the asparagus again, what I've learned about that science is not everybody can smell it. It is not about the fact that not everybody's body reproduces that. It's about the fact that not everybody's body can smell it. It's an olfactory issue as to why only some can smell that.
Great. I mean, that's a really cool stat. Thanks for sharing that with me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Texter's getting in. Great local baseball talk. Your guests schooled you, Matt. All right. Good. But then here's one. I hate the Cubs. We'll always root against them. Because misery loves company, but isn't baseball the best? Why, yes, it is. And here's one. That last bit about being at the opener with their dad warmed this Sox fan's cold black heart. Well, I'm glad. Thank you so much to the listeners. I love doing this with you on a Sunday morning. Thank you to Sean Sears for doing a great job producing the show. Thank you to Garrett Cooper, the Cubs' first baseman, for joining us. Steve Stone at the top of the 10 o'clock hour with interesting stuff towards the end. On Jason Benetti and the broadcast switcheroo. And thank you to Sam Blum from The Athletic as well. CBS Sports Radio is coming up next. By the way, Bernstein Holmes and Rahimi are headed to Circa Resort and Casino in Vegas on Thursday, April 11th and Friday, April 12th. They'll be broadcasting live from 10 to 2 both days at Stadium Swim for their For the Win event. If you want to experience this with Bernstein Holmes and Rahimi, go to CircaLasVegas.com for more info. Cubs baseball at 1 o'clock here on The Score, and then the home opener tomorrow. Have a great Sunday and the rest of your weekend, everyone.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
And now Julio has a chance to win it. At the bottom of the 10th, we've got a pitching change.
That's your ball game! Julio wins it in the 10th inning!
They'll all go home happy tonight. How about that?
That was a bullet, too. He hit an absolute line drive into right center field. Inside out swing. That's a great approach right there.
Julio Rodriguez with the walk-off hit on Friday night against the Boston Red Sox. Actually, it was last night, right? Late last night, Julio with the walk-off. And as requested during the week, this song is back from Pavement. Stephen Malkmus and Pavement, several of them big baseball fans, the major leagues indeed. Julio Rodriguez, his first career walk-off hit, And that was pretty damn cool to watch that last night, late last night, or early this morning, depending on when you saw it. And if you didn't, well, there it was. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. We'll talk to Sam Blum from The Athletic about Ohtani and more at about 11:25. But we're going to spray around MLB a little bit and give you my team of the moment as well. First, though, let's take a look at the lineups as in for both of the local games coming up today. First, the White Sox will be hosting the Tigers. Jack Flaherty, the former Cardinal, the former Harvard Westlake High School teammate of Max Fried and Lucas Giolito, former tutor or under the tutelage of Ethan Katz. He goes for Detroit against Eric Fetty and the White Sox. I'm very much looking forward to watching Fetty and Flaherty as I combine them into a golfer and a golf analyst right there. Can we dump the last 20 seconds? Is that how it works? Can I just dump the last 20 seconds, pretend none of it existed?
Yeah,
Sean, do we have that capability? Yeah, that's how it works? Okay, let's pretend it didn't exist. Let's wipe it. I need a flashy thing, like from Men in Black. Eric Fetty against Jack Flaherty for the White Sox and the Tigers today. White Sox lineup, Benintendi, Moncada, Robert Jr., Eloy, Andrew Vaughn at first base, Shoemake at second base today. Paul DeJong gets the start at short. Dominic Fletcher, the former D-back out there in right field, and Corey Lee, the young catcher. That's a more interesting player to watch than Martin Maldonado, who you know very well. You know what he brings, and he's on the tail end of what he brings. It's always more fun in a rebuilding year to watch the kids and see if they're any good, right? So there's Corey Lee playing a catcher for the White Sox today. Cubs and Rangers in Texas. If the Cubs got to win this so they can meatloaf. You got to meatloaf them, take two out of three, and then come back and try to right the ship at Wrigley. John Gray, the former Rocky, on the mound for the Rangers. Jordan Wicks, the Cubs young lefty who came up and was so good last year with that great wipeout changeup. You'll see Jordan Wicks today on your television, and you'll hear it right here on your radio at 670 The Score. 1:35 is the first pitch, 1 o'clock. We begin pregame. The lineup is this. Ian Happ leads off as a DH. So kind of a little pseudo day off for Ian Happ and the hamstrings. He will be the DH, but will not play defense. Seiya Suzuki hits second in right. Cody Bellinger in center. And Christopher Morel is the cleanup hitter. Then Dansby Swanson at five. Michael Bush at six. Nico Horner at seven. That, folks, is so far the established top seven against right-handed pitching. We've now seen at least a couple of times anyway. Mike Tauchman gets the start in left field and will play for the first time in 2024. And Miguel Amaya is the catcher. So you got Amaya, you get Happ as a DH, you get to see Tauchman in left, and otherwise you're seeing that lineup as previously represented by Craig Counsell. All right, so I wanted to talk to you about a team of the moment. And for that, Sean, we've got everything ready. It's very exciting. We've got the music. We've got a highlight. And then I've got a drunk owner. I mean, there's a lot going on here. But yes, I'll give it to you every once in a while when the mood strikes, my team of the moment. It's the Baltimore Orioles on the strength in part of finally having an ace.
Standing atop the hill here at Camden Yards, 29 years old, 6'3", 245 pounds from Bakersfield, California. He is the new ace of the Baltimore Orioles, a National League Cy Young winner 3 years ago, the crown jewel of Michael Elias' offseason. Corbin Burnes looks pretty good in orange and white. Payoff pitch to start the year. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Corbin Burnes in a nutshell. It's been untouchable. 11 strikeouts, 16 in a row retired.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Oh, yeah, with apologies to Asia. The team of the moment is the Baltimore Orioles. They just have that glow. I think they're going to win the whole damn thing. And I've thought that during the offseason, and I am emboldened now watching them through the first two games. I mean, so far, the Orioles have gone, I believe it was, what, 13-4 and then 11-2, I think are the scores. Both Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez were dominant, getting a ton of swing and miss. And those, they've got both those guys at the top, but Burnes, the undoubted ace who you know you can just pencil in. There is nothing as valuable in baseball as a front of the rotation top line pitcher because it affects the confidence and comfort level of absolutely everyone else on the roster. Everyone. So they've got that, and then they've got all these outrageous kids. Gunnar Henderson is going to be up there in MVP conversation. If it's not, Adley Rutschman who's going to be up there in MVP conversation. Did you see Jackson Holliday's start at the minor leagues already? My goodness, that guy could have started on the big league level, but they've got Cedric Mullins, and they got to figure out where to put Holliday, but they're just absolutely, absurdly, embarrassingly loaded. And they're about to finalize their transfer to new owners. And in a week when Peter Angelos passed away, rest in peace, the new owner, Mike Arrighetti, made sure to get every Orioles fan he could a beer on opening day.
Oi! Oi! I want to introduce myself. I'm Mike Arrighetti, one of the new owners of the O's. This is my best friend, Smitty, also a new owner of the O's. And this is Mitch. We're buying everybody a beer.
Let's go!
They've got that new ownership bump. That's what they're going to feel. That's what they're going to ride. I'm sure the broadcasters are riding it. Kevin Brown is probably riding it, that new ownership bump. I'm sure he's happy with the new peeps. And overall, the Orioles just have, they have that glow. They have that thing. Thank you to the Texas for pointing out, yes, the Cubs cannot Meatloaf because Meatloaf is winning 2 out of 3 because 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Thank you very much. You're hoping to keep the Rangers to only a Meatloaf as opposed to a sweep. That's really what I was trying to say. There is, however, somebody awesome, my favorite player in the game, who I took number one in the fantasy draft earlier in the week, shocking many who assumed I was going Ronald Acuna. But with the number one pick, I chose positional flexibility, and I feel pretty good about it. The man played second base on Friday, did Mookie Betts of the Dodgers, and he made a hell of a play.
It's important to him for him to reestablish that he can go out there and do that.
A little check swing.
Jump off the bat. That's everything. The first two steps, he knew he had to get out there, timed it perfectly. Like, the man don't got enough hardware in his house.
Mookie Betts with a great catch at second base. He's played second. He's played shortstop. You know he's Gold Glove caliber in right field. He's played a lot of center in his life. And oh, by the way, he's hitting bombs left and right.
The 1-1 from Helsley. Mookie Betts hits it high, hits it hard. Left center field at the wall. Gone! Mookie Betts won't let the Dodgers go quietly. They're within one.
4 out of 5 times tonight he has reached base. The only time he recorded an out was a pop-up to center field.
Man, that dude is just outrageous. He has played more games than just about everybody else this year because they played the ones in Korea. He's played 5 games. His OPS is above 2. He's got 10 RBIs already. He's got 4 homers and 10 RBIs on 11 hits, does Mookie Betts, playing the middle infield. I think he's going to win MVP. Sean, you think he's going to win MVP. How do you feel about my choice to take him number one overall ahead of Acuna? Right now it's aging well.
Dude, That's exactly what I would have done. He is so good. He gets to play Major League Baseball like it's Little League. Like, he gets to go be the shortstop, and tomorrow he's going to be the second baseman, and maybe he'll pitch, and maybe he'll be in left field, and he's going to do it all awesomely. And also, he's leading the league in home runs.
And also, he's a very nice guy.
Just
he's
super like a fun.
Super fun, kind, well-adjusted dude who likes to help feed the homeless after a World Series game, as he did one night in Boston. It's like, I mean, it's just, he's outrageous. He's born in a lab, I'm convinced. Ah, boy. How do we get players like that? 670, the score is where you are. Matt Spiegel is who you are with. A few more things to get to towards the end of the show, that's for sure. But coming up next, I want to know exactly what's going on with Shohei Ohtani and this investigation, and if there's anything that we should be aware of, anything we should be waiting on, any reason to think that this will get bigger or not. Let's talk to Sam Blum from The Athletic about it next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. And I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports. Up until a couple days ago, I didn't know that this was happening. Just to kind of just go over the result, in conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
That is the director of performance for the Los Angeles Dodgers, acting as the new interpreter for Shohei Ohtani the other day, as Shohei talked about everything that's going on. Look, this is Hit and Run, Chicago's venerable baseball show. We get to talk baseball in this unique two-team town, and we have all morning long done a ton of Cubs, a ton of White Sox, and we'll do some more Cubs. You'll hear from Craig Counsell, in fact, before we get out of here at the top of the hour. But this was the biggest story in sports. Is it fading away? Is it going to come back? What are we dealing with here? Let's talk to somebody who's been very, very close to it and done some excellent work. Sam Blum covers both the Angels and the Dodgers for The Athletic out there in California, and has been part of the reporting on Ohtani for The Athletic since the news broke about the scandal with Ipe Muzihara. So let's talk to Sam right now, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Oh, look at that. Isn't that convenient, Sam? Circa's a great place, home of the world's largest sports book. Thank you to Circa. This is the world we live in, Sam, where none of us have moral high ground. Not one of us.
That's a very well put. I agree with that.
You know, it's crazy.
I'm losing $4.5 million, though.
Right. Well, yeah, there's that. And there's the fact that I'm not playing, of course, in the games that I'm betting on or endorsing ways for you to play on them. But I wanted to touch on the personal side of it first. Mm-hmm. That interpreter that folks just heard there, that Dodgers director of performance, that moment signifies the first moment for Shohei Ohtani speaking publicly in America without Ipe Muzihara. Like, since 2017, this is a dear friend who, you know, evolved into dog sitter and early on was car driver and all of this. It's like, I can't imagine the personal toll that this must be taking on Shohei if we are to take the story at face value at this moment.
Yeah, and I agree. I would also couch it with, if you take the story at face value, and if you do, I mean, it's a really, I would feel horrible for Ohtani. I mean, like you said, not only was he an interpreter, he was really every part of his life, involved in it. They were spent 365 days of the year together. There was no off days from this friendship, this relationship. You know, I think they were both very much reliant on each other in certain ways. I think it will be interesting to see how Ohtani kind of navigates Major League Baseball without Ipe. You know, it's I think goes beyond when people even really understand that level of reliance that he had on Ipe for everything, whether that's getting food, whether that's scouting for him, whether that's helping him train, whether that's, you know, going out and coaching him at times. I mean, this guy was everything. So it is a significant loss in Ohtani's orbit at his baseball, you know, way of being. You know, that being said, you played the audio on Will Ayrton there, the interim interpreter for Ohtani, and it didn't sound like there was a ton of love lost. He sounded quite frustrated, Ohtani did, with the way everything's played out. So, you know, we'll see. I think there's going to be, you know, you asked if the story's fading. I really think it, you know, it's possible there are lulls in this just from a lack of new information, but you know, this story is going to have a lot of legs and it's going to go on for a long, long time. And, you know, I'd be curious to see kind of where everything lands. You know, there are a lot of investigations happening right now.
So what investigations are happening right now? You've got the feds investigating Bowyer, the bookie. You've got MLB investigating Ohtani and the situation. What am I missing if there's other stuff going on as well?
There's an IRS investigation into Ipe, and I think this is the situation in general, you know, possible, you know, tax fraud, I'm guessing. There's probably a federal investigation, you know, that goes beyond just Bowyer, and it could go into everything that happened here. You know, Ohtani's representative said that they turned over information over to, you know, a federal authority, I believe, or, you know, an investigative authority, not necessarily saying which one it was. So there's still so much that has to happen. So I imagine that these investigations will, you know, will require Ohtani's cooperation at some point. And, you know, as that happens, it will be interesting to see kind of where, you know, what gets out there, how the story evolves. You know, who's possibly held accountable for this, because there's going to be accountability in some capacity. At the end of the day, Shohei's, you know, bank account was paying out, you know, millions of dollars to an allegedly illegal bookmaker. So there's not just going to be the end of that, right? There's not just going to be an I'm sorry at the end of the story. There's going to be an accountability, I imagine, for some people, for someone, and we'll have to see how it all plays out. Because for right now, it's, you know, I think Shohei's story was believable to some extent. I think that, you know, I trust that he's not some sort of degenerate gambler, but I do think you have to find out if he had any awareness of this, you know, because it almost, you know, it goes beyond believability that he would have had no idea that millions of dollars were just, you know, being bled from his bank account without him knowing. But, you know, that's still to be determined. And it's, and for now it's, I guess, the story that everyone has been told.
You know, Sam Blum from The Athletic is with us. I think most of us know that in our personal lives, and we have watched it in public life too, the sooner you tell the truth, the better off you are in terms of public perception. And that's certainly true in personal life, right? Like, the lie is what gets us in trouble on stuff. But, you know, listening to those like 12 minutes of what Ohtani had written, there were a bunch of times where I'm like, oh, my God, is that all true? Like, if he's really hammering down on this and painting Ipe as this, and if there are some lies in there, I'm not saying for sure there are, but it sure felt like there were a few times where I'm like, well, that kind of defies plausibility. Will that damage him in the eyes of the Dodgers, in the eyes of the MLB, MLB investigation? Because, you know, on the corporate level, deny, deny, deny. We've always heard that as well. And then you have to be comfortable with the lies. But boy, it started to feel very awkward. And I wonder what the damage of a lie would be.
Well, you know, at this point, you take Ohtani at his word. And that's kind of my feeling on it. But I agree with you that there are certain aspects of the story that I think need to be followed up on, because it's, you know, like, it strains credibility to believe that some of those things could possibly be true. But, you know, you take him at his word. I've never known Ohtani in the years that I've covered him closely to be someone that, you know, embellishes lies or even is, you know, anything other than honest. He's very evasive, but he's always been honest when he's spoken. So, you know, I for now, you know, you take him at his word. But if there is a lie, and if there is a lie here, that would be a significant blow to his reputation and to his career, and possibly even to his ability to play the game. Because, you know, at the end of the day, this is not baseball. You know, we're not talking about baseball here, right? We're talking about real life stuff. And I think that's where some of the mistakes have been made in this process. You know, and I put a lot of emphasis for blame on Nez Bilello and the agency that's representing Ohtani and has, you know, at times provided, you know, incorrect information to reporters that have only inflamed the situation. And Nez has not come out and talked about this. He's, you know, he's put other people in front, you know, as a microphone to talk. And I think he, you know, has made decisions in this process that he needs to explain publicly. And it's, you know, it's not been a good reflection of Nez, but it is an accurate reflection of how he's always operated in Ohtani's, you know, I guess, way of being to some extent. I mean, he's always made things difficult I think, for other people to understand kind of what he's dealing with. But I think that they just don't realize this is real life we're talking. This is not baseball. This is a serious situation. And so if there's a lie being told here, that could be very, very damaging. And you hope for Ohtani's sake and for his ability to play this game at the highest level, because in my opinion, he's the greatest baseball player I've ever seen on a field. And I don't think many people could disagree with me on that one. You hope at the end of the day he's telling the truth here.
Yeah, what is baseball going to learn on the larger scale from this stuff, Sam? Whether it's about the mingling with unsavory characters like Bowyer, and if that's even something that's controllable. Whether it's what you were touching on with Bolello, the agent, and the Dodgers, like everything going through the interpreter. And kind of respecting that boundary when the truth is you don't exactly know. I mean, what are the broader lessons that MLB is going to take away?
I think it's less about lessons and more about warning signs here, because I look at this as, I think we saw it a couple of days afterward in the NBA where a player was put on leave for, potentially, impact. He was maybe betting on his props, on the unders. And I think what you're seeing is that it is very hard to keep gambling out of the actual game itself at times. And I think we're going to see more and more, at the end of the day. And I'm not saying Ipe bet on baseball. I'm not saying Shohei bet on baseball. I'm not saying baseball was bet on at all here. But, I think gambling in and of itself is becoming a bigger and bigger issue when it comes to the actual game. I understand that, fans, and it increases it. It helps the fan experience in a lot of ways. And, you're not walking this back. I don't think this gate has been opened and it is going to only keep getting wider and wider. But I think it's a warning sign, in my opinion, is to, this is something they're going to have to combat. And I think anybody who's found to be, gambling in a way that breaks the rules needs to get face severe punishment. Even if on the outside it looks like it's, and maybe it is to some extent a little bit hypocritical, because these leagues and these teams are partnering with gambling companies. And it's silly to then go and suspend players for it, but you have to, because the integrity of the game is very important. And if players and if teams and if coaches and if anybody is violating that, then everything becomes completely useless and it's not a game anymore. So I think it's a warning sign, and hopefully people are on guard for this and are making safeguards and putting those in place to make sure that this is not something that can happen in an even worse scale.
Last thing for you, Sam. The Angels had a team meeting after game two. Is that a good sign? Probably
no. Not a good sign. The first two games have not gone well for this team. Ron Washington, he brought the entire team out on their first off day, did a full team workout. I think that things will be done a little differently here with Ron Washington. He's definitely a little more old school in certain ways. But no, it's not a good sign when you lose 24-7 the first two days.
It doesn't seem to be, but I'm glad Anthony Rendon has shown up. I think that's a nice touch that he's actually wants to be.
He's playing.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see how long that goes and where that takes us. But yeah, the first couple of games have been rough.
Any chance that Mike Trout gets dealt this year at the deadline?
He left open that possibility when he spoke at the beginning of spring. He's a very loyal person, I think, in a lot of ways in his life, if you know the guy. And I have a hard time believing he's going to pull that trigger and say he wants to be traded, because at the end of the day, he has that no trade clause, and that's up to him. Yeah. Also the contract, the contract's not necessarily team friendly in any way. He's getting older. He's shown some offensive decline, and that contract is gone through 2030. So I think in an ideal world, it makes more sense than it does in practicality. But you never know with this team, and you never know with the way he might feel about where this team's going, because, the Angels do not operate in the best interest of winning in a lot of ways. And you see it year after year after year. And I think it's only a matter of time before he gets to that point where he might not feel like it's working for him. But, it's so hard to predict with someone like Mike Trout, because he's really quite loyal to this place.
Sam Blum, thank you so much. Appreciate you. Have a wonderful rest of the season, and we'll check in down the road.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
All right, you got it. That's Sam Blum from The Athletic here on 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Tomorrow is the home opener at Wrigley Field. The emotions run deep for certain people. And I am very close to certain people that the emotions run deep for. And I want to share their story next here on Easter Sunday. Keep it here on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're ready. I mean, I think we've got to the point in spring training where, you know, you guys are prepared. And so you feel good about that. But look, you know, that's why the season is such a challenge and why it's different. And it doesn't, what happens in spring training doesn't guarantee you anything. It doesn't guarantee the hot hitter in spring training a good opening day. None of that is guaranteed. It's competition, and you know, the other team's trying to beat you, and that goes on every single day. So it's a different, you know, you flip the switch to like a really different game. You know, you're at this slower spring training pace, this casual spring training pace, and that switch gets flipped really quickly, especially when you start on the road against a team like the Texas Rangers.
That is Cubs manager Craig Counsell the other day on Parkinson Spiegel. I love that show. I think it's a great show. Weekday afternoons. The Cubs season opening series in Texas concludes this afternoon. Our coverage begins at 1, coming up right here on 670 The Score with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 1:35. For the latest news on the Cubs or Sox, try listening to chapters from our show through the Odyssey app. Just search for 670 The Score and tap on a recent episode of our show to get started. And remember that tomorrow, The Score and BetMGM will be at Sluggers in Wrigleyville before the home opener. Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi will be broadcasting live from 10 to 12:45, followed by Zach Zaidman's pregame show until the first pitch. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run until the top of the hour. Some of you know that I am married to a meatball Cubs fan in the most delightful of ways. And as we all prepare for Easter festivities, Christine Spiegel, I have to ask you, are you going to the home opener tomorrow?
Yes, I am.
Who are you going with?
My best friend from grammar school.
Okay. Your best friend from grammar school. Your sister, who is also someone you went to grammar school with, is here. Right? You guys did go to grammar school together, Jenny?
Actually, she actually went to kindergarten with me twice.
Oh, that's right. I remember they wanted you to go together. Well, you know what? You guys are a podcast waiting to happen. That's just always been the case. But it's the home opener. Tell me what the Cubs home opener means to you guys, Jenny.
Can I start, please? Oh, my God. Okay, so I just want to say that a shout out to my dad. So we went to St. Mary of the Angels grammar school on Hermitage and Cortland. And there was an announcement every home opener day that said, you cannot take off today. No kid can be off on this day because it's a home opener.
So kids used to cut school and go to the Cubs home opener.
Until my dad showed up and walked in with his shorts, cut off shorts and a tank top and said, where's my kids? Get my kids. Jenny's in this grade and Chris is in this grade and we're going to the home opener. Go get them right now. And so while everyone was doing the lesson, or actually we had the home opener on TV, We'd say, bye, my dad's here, we're going, peace out. And we went, so.
All right, so if I'm psychologically profiling, the home opener means freedom from school, being cool, Your dad loving you more than the rules, right? There's a lot of levels that go on with this for you guys. And I've seen you both very emotional at Wrigley Field, and it makes all the sense in the world. Christine, tell people about what would happen sometimes on a Sunday.
On a Sunday?
Yeah, wouldn't he pick you up and take you to?
So he would pick us up. He'd say, if the Cubs were playing, that's where we always went. We always went to Wrigley. We sat in the bleachers. We brought whatever cousin was available. It was amazing. And we absolutely loved it. And Sundays are still like, if there's a Cubs game, that's where I want to be.
And Wrigley is an emotional, happy place for you, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. My favorite place in the world.
Is it an emotional, happy place for you too, Jenny?
100%. And back then, hot dogs were $1.50.
They used to have Frosty Malts. They got rid of Frosty Malts, which is a shame.
Yeah, they walk around with lemon chills now, you know, but they don't have any malts anymore.
Can I just tell you, game day, we would stand in line at the bleachers for $6 to get in, and we got there probably around 10 o'clock, and it was the best time ever.
So yeah, let's paint that picture, can we please, of that time in the bleachers. So you guys get there, how quickly into the game does your dad's shirt come off?
Oh, right away. Right away. If it was hot, his shirt's off. He's drinking a beer. He's like talking to everyone around him. Uh-huh. Yeah. And his best friend's with him. Yeah. It was amazing.
Okay. And then you guys are free to run around the bleachers a little bit, correct?
We're free to spend money.
Okay. And who was the outfielder that you talked to?
Jerry Morales. We would scream Jerry Morales until everyone around us like got sick of us, and we would be like, Jerry, Jerry, and then he would turn around and finally wave to us, and then we would shut up.
A favorite line was, "Hey, Monday, where's Tuesday?"
What does that even mean?
Rick Monday. Yeah.
All right. So, God. So,
come on,
high end. Sean, I'm sorry. But the high end shtick that's going on out there in the bleachers.
This is some good stuff.
Right? I mean, Sean, I love this, the like screaming Jerry Morales, Jerry, Jerry, until he turns around. Don't people still do that in the bleachers? Scream at somebody?
I remember screaming at like Shane Victorino when he's on the Phillies. Like, it still happens now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, it does. Christine, I know you're having kind of a rough off season and begin to the season because you miss somebody.
Yes, I miss Grandpa Rossi. It's hard to watch. It was hard to watch opening day without him, and it will be hard tomorrow. But I know I have to go on. But yeah, it breaks my heart that he's not a part of the team.
I gotta say, when I was with you guys and your dad. At a game, I think it was 2 years ago, and we pulled every string that we could, and we got like the good fancy seats and all the things. He was as happy as I've ever seen that man. It's memorable, isn't it, Jenny? Him there with the two of you in the good seats.
Lifetime of memories with him, to be honest. And every year that we actually can take him, it's our celebration together of all the years that he has taken us to the home opener year after year after year. And we say, hey, this is us.
Yeah, so you get to give it back a little bit. It's beautiful stuff. All right, thank you, ladies. Am I still making the asparagus, or is it made? I do? So I need, even though I just did a radio show, I have to make the asparagus. You know? I mean, I don't know if like, you know, Colin Cowherd has to make the asparagus today. Stephen A. Smith.
More money than you.
Colin Cowherd is indeed making more money than me. That is accurate.
That was amazing.
She's not wrong, Sean. She's not wrong.
No, it's correct,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but I make the hell out of some asparagus
really?
Today. Happy Easter to you. Are you going? You going somewhere to celebrate and have a meal? What are you up to?
Yeah. I'm gonna go see my mom after this. We're gonna see my family out in the burbs. So. Yeah,
beautiful.
I'm sure we'll have some green bean casserole and whatnot. Maybe not. I don't know about asparagus. I would eat some asparagus, though.
Right? I know. And just remember, folks, if you do eat the asparagus and then later on you're going to the bathroom and you smell the asparagus again, what I've learned about that science is not everybody can smell it. It is not about the fact that not everybody's body reproduces that. It's about the fact that not everybody's body can smell it. It's an olfactory issue as to why only some can smell that.
Great. I mean, that's a really cool stat. Thanks for sharing that with me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Texter's getting in. Great local baseball talk. Your guests schooled you, Matt. All right. Good. But then here's one. I hate the Cubs. We'll always root against them. Because misery loves company, but isn't baseball the best? Why, yes, it is. And here's one. That last bit about being at the opener with their dad warmed this Sox fan's cold black heart. Well, I'm glad. Thank you so much to the listeners. I love doing this with you on a Sunday morning. Thank you to Sean Sears for doing a great job producing the show. Thank you to Garrett Cooper, the Cubs' first baseman, for joining us. Steve Stone at the top of the 10 o'clock hour with interesting stuff towards the end. On Jason Benetti and the broadcast switcheroo. And thank you to Sam Blum from The Athletic as well. CBS Sports Radio is coming up next. By the way, Bernstein Holmes and Rahimi are headed to Circa Resort and Casino in Vegas on Thursday, April 11th and Friday, April 12th. They'll be broadcasting live from 10 to 2 both days at Stadium Swim for their For the Win event. If you want to experience this with Bernstein Holmes and Rahimi, go to CircaLasVegas.com for more info. Cubs baseball at 1 o'clock here on The Score, and then the home opener tomorrow. Have a great Sunday and the rest of your weekend, everyone.
From from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.